Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to PFF Fantasy Football Podcast, Week 16 Game by Game Preview Edition. I'm your host, Ian Hart. It's happy Week 16. Always a great day to be great, especially when we're just one more win away from getting that fantasy championship round. As always, our goal here is to win you guys those fantasy championships. So I hope we are well on that path. And with that, let's continue going right down that path and win this semifinal round. If you guys have paid any attention at all this week to social media, talking heads, the news, whatever, you've undoubtedly heard about the brutal weather sweeping across the country. That said, guys, we have a great person in our industry to help us figure some of this stuff out. His name is Kevin Roth. He is the lead meteorologist over at RotoGrinders. You can find his work, rotogrinders.com/weather/NFL. Has some awesome premium stuff he does as well, but you can get his base forecast for free. And I was able to use a lot of that stuff to help with the weather updates here, both in this podcast and also a column I am writing that will be live on PFF.com on Thursday. So at Kevin Roth WX on Twitter. Appreciate a true meteorologist helping us get through, again, a slate that is literally going to be impacting 20 of the 32 games with some form of weather or the other. So going to be going through each and every game as we always do on this edition of the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. And I'll be sure to let you guys know which ones are being impacted enough by weather where you should actively downgrade the players involved. So with all that said, let's start things off with one of those games on Thursday Night Football, the Jaguars at the Jets. It is a pick 'em at this point. The game total resting at a lowly 36, tied for the second lowest mark outside of that Saints-Browns matchup. So yes, this is bad, bad, bad weather here. This is actually not the coldest game on the slate. It is going to be in the 50-degree range, but 100% chance of precipitation throughout the game. And we also have wind speeds of 15-plus miles per hour, maybe even getting to that sweet 20 spot. And by sweet 20 spot, I mean when you see winds over 20 miles per hour, it is very bad for all pass catchers involved. So it's a shame because of how damn good Trevor Lawrence and this Jaguars offense have been operating ever since their week 11 bye, really. You take these last 4 weeks of action, Trevor Lawrence, number one quarterback in PFF passing grade, number one in passer rating. Pick your favorite passing stat, and there's a good chance he's going to be up near the top of the leaderboard. But when all of a sudden we have a matchup against Sauce Gardner and company, it does warrant downgrading him just a little bit. So Trevor Lawrence, someone that I think is really starting to break his way into next year's top six quarterback conversation. The more I do look at the weather this week and just get concerned about that overall matchup, I am going to be starting guys like Dak Prescott, like Joe Burrow, like Lamar Jackson, just ahead of T-Law. Still would take him over Kirk Cousins, Tom Brady, Geno Smith, and folks like that. Zay Jones, Christian Kirk, still top 26 wide receivers for me. I'm not completely losing my mind about the weather for them or tough matchup, in large part because we've seen both these guys with ease, you know, attack the underneath areas of the field throughout the year. Both of them have some sub 10-yard average target depths, which, hey, would make sense if they're able to hopefully overcome these conditions and matchups with more high percentage shorter throws. Final note for the Jaguars, Travis Etienne hasn't been the prettiest second half. I get that. A little bit injury induced, a little bit just bad luck and also not catching that many passes. But that said, six straight non-injured games where Etienne has had at least 73% of the offensive snaps. And with that sort of workload, it is tough to move him too far down the ranks. So he is coming off a top 20 finish last week against the Cowboys. Wouldn't be surprised if he keeps on keeping on. I would start Etienne this week ahead of guys like Alvin Kamara, David Montgomery, Zonovan Knight, J.K. Dobbins, who honestly have pretty similar roles to him in terms of what we're kind of expecting from a volume standpoint. But Etienne ends on the field more often, so I think he has a slightly higher ceiling. On the Jets side of things, I am expecting Garrett Wilson to catch some shadow treatment from Tyson Campbell, and I wouldn't blame any of you guys for not having, you know, much of an idea of who Tyson Campbell is. Still pretty new on the scene in terms of being one of the league's better shadow cornerbacks, but he's been just that this season. PFF's ninth highest graded cornerback in pure coverage grade. Look, he got toasted by Davante Adams about a month ago, 146 yards and two touchdowns, but otherwise, guys, he shadowed Mike Williams, Cortland Sutton, DeMarcus Robinson, and Michael Gallup, only allowed one freaking catch to each of those guys. That said, Garrett Wilson, not exactly the easiest guy to lock up. I remember some of the Jets players, I don't know if it was training camp or shortly into the season, but they were comparing Garrett Wilson to Justin Jefferson just because of how terrified they thought some of the opposing cornerbacks were to actually match up with him in man coverage. And you see that reflected now through 15 weeks of action. 2.66 yards per out run against man compared to 1.86 against zone. Garrett Wilson, it's a tough matchup, but you know what? He's had plenty of those tough matchups over the past month and a half, 75 plus receiving yards in six of his last seven games. I am still firing up Garrett Wilson as a recommended start, top 24 wide receiver. That said, having Zach Wilson under center, having these weather concerns, that's why Garrett Wilson is could be a little bit closer to the wide receiver two borderline as opposed to the wide receiver one. Final note here with Zonovan Knight, guys. I know last week wasn't pretty, but let's face it, this Detroit Lions run defense has been a lot better over the second half of the season. I'm not completely fading Zonovan because of one bad game, especially when you look at this upcoming schedule. I mean, we got this matchup against the Jaguars, and then next week, I believe it's another juicy one because we actually only have, I believe, the other one. It's Zonovan Knight and Zach Moss for the Colts have the two easiest schedules here down the stretch. So yes, Zonovan against the Jaguars this week, the Seahawks next week. Don't be surprised if we get a little bit of a comeback season from Zonovan here. I have him ranked right around that top 20 spot alongside guys that, again, aren't going to catch a ton of passes, but you can do a lot worse than 15 to 20 carries per game. On the Saturday side of things, yes, folks, tons of games on Saturday. Hopefully you already realize that, but please, for the love of God, get those lineups set. On Friday, Saturday morning, worst case, we have the Texans at the Titans kicking things off. Titans favored by 4.5, game total at 36. So again, this is not good weather. I wouldn't put it in the same category, and by I mean Kevin Roth is not putting it in the same category as our worst three matchups of the week, but still not overly great. The feels like temperature is just 5 degrees Fahrenheit. There in Nashville, but we don't have much precipitation or wind concerns. So with that in mind, just small downgrades to the everyone involved, not overly worried about it. You know who should be overly worried about, you know, some factor going on though, is the Houston Texans defense against Derrick freaking Henry, who absolutely owns this team. I mean, you look at his last four games against the Texans, 219 yards, two touchdowns on the ground, 250 and two touchdowns, 212 and two touchdowns, 211 and three touchdowns. And Ryan Tannehill apparently could have a tough time getting ready to go, which means they're going to have more reason than ever to give Henry the ball as much as he can possibly handle. If we do have Ryan Tannehill out, that's going to nuke the pass game volume of everyone involved. Even if Treylon Brooks is back, even if Chiggy, even if Treylon Brooks is not back, and then we're trying to go back to the Chiggy Okonkwo side of things, we just can't do it. They do not trust Malik Willis to throw even a little bit. I mean, he actually faced this defense earlier in the season when Ryan Tannehill missed time, and he only dropped back to pass 10 total times. So with Willis, you know, we saw it at Liberty. We even saw in the preseason, the guy has theoretical great fantasy upside thanks to his wheels, but we haven't seen it in the regular season just yet. 5 carries for just 12 yards against his Texans defense in his first start. He played the Chiefs next week and he had 8 carries for 40 yards. So it's not terrible rushing production, but we can't have you be a complete zero as a passer. That's what Malik Willis is right now. So if Tannehill is out, it's still not going to make Malik a viable fantasy option. On the Houston side of things, Chris Moore is really the only guy I'm at all interested in playing in this matchup, and that is contingent on Brandon Cooks and Nico Collins staying sidelined. So as always, you can check out the Friday edition of this podcast. Myself and Nick Botifer go through every single fantasy relevant injury ahead of the weekend. Yeah, so check that out later. But Chris Moore for now, still looking good. 20 targets over the past 2 weeks, 36% target share over that stretch. Ivan Riggs, my wide receiver, 32 this week, ahead of guys like DJ Chark and all those Browns and Saints receivers involved in that mess of a game up there in Cleveland. So again, Chris Moore, I'm not saying he's this year's Amon-Ra St. Brown. We saw a much longer stretch over the last 6-7 weeks where the Sun God was absolutely balling. But in terms of a lot of guys getting banged up in the offense and not having many other avenues to go with the ball. That's what we have seen with Chris Moore. And against this Titans pass funnel defense, certainly someone that I am confident enough in to slide in that recommended start wide receiver 3 territory. Seahawks taking on the Chiefs in Arrowhead. Chiefs are 10-point home favorites, game total at 49. Similar weather to the Tennessee game, where it's not ideal, but we also don't necessarily need to downgrade guys severely across the board. It's going to be feeling like -6 degrees there in Kansas City. So not ideal, but low precipitation and a wind concern. On the Seattle side of things, it seems like Tyler Lockett's going to miss at least one game with this broken finger. So that could be a nice little boost for Marquise Goodwin against this Chiefs defense that we have seen allow the fourth most PPR points per game to opposing wide receivers. So desperate, big 14-team league, 3 flexes or something. Marquise Goodwin, I think, can be fired up as a boomer bust wide receiver 4. But the big takeaway here is just firing up DK Metcalf as the true upside wide receiver 1 that we've seen him be for large portions of this season. But also note that Kenneth Walker did open up the week with a DMP with an ankle injury. Hopefully it was just more of a maintenance state than anything. If not, we just see Travis Homer have that robust 91% snap rate with Walker's sideline. That game did also come with DJ Dallas out of the picture as well, so not a complete given that that would happen again. And they only gave him 12 carries, but that said, something happens to Kenneth Walker, don't be afraid to fire up Travis Homer as more of a, you know, borderline RB2. But assuming Walker's fine and good to go, really not worried about last week's kind of dud. I mean, I know he saved it based on that big catch and run there at the end, but you know what? He had a 65% route rate. That's really solid, guys. That's actually higher than what Austin Eckler had last week. So yes, targets per route. We can talk about the differences there, but with Kenneth Walker, I do think he's, you know, a bit less game script dependent than he's kind of been made out to be. He is my RB13, being well aware that the game script could go south in a hurry. On the Chiefs side of things, pretty straightforward offense at this point. We have Kelce and Mahomes. You're obviously starting every single place, even if there's a fire. And there's Juju Smith-Schuster, who, if you look at his last 6 games, not injury impacted, PPR wide receiver 7, wide receiver 4, wide receiver 8, 1 dud, wide receiver 58. That was the Bengals game where Mahomes and really nobody in the passing game could get going. And then wide receiver 5, and most recently, wide receiver 15. So Juju Smith-Schuster for me, wide receiver 13 on the week, legit top 15 option that I'm honestly equating to Chris Godwin and Keenan Allen at this point. What a time to be alive. Then we also have the latest star of the show, Jerick McKinnon, back-to-back overall RB1 finishes in full PPR scoring, and the Chiefs have responded by giving him more and more work. Snap rates over the last 4 weeks, 34%, 47%, 57%, and 62%. Now set up brilliantly once again against the Seahawks defense that's the second worst unit in the league in PPR points per game surrendered to opposing running backs. So bottom 5 specifically in receptions and receiving yards, which is where we're getting all that goodness from Jerick McKinnon. Great day to have Jerick McKinnon on the squad. He is my RB14 on the week, ahead of guys like Raheem Mostert, Miles Sanders, Ezekiel Elliott, Travis Etienne, where we just don't have that same pass game upside. I will say, though, don't completely give up on Isaiah Pacheco yet either. Justin Fields right now has the NFL's longest streak. I believe it's 8 straight games with at least 60 rushing yards. But right behind him is Isaiah Pacheco. So certainly a little more touchdown dependent than you would hope for in an offense that loves to start getting quirky, you know, inside the 5-yard line with all the underhand shovels and Travis Kelce direct snaps and whatever the hell else Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy can think up, you know, after a couple puffs or something. But when you do look at Pacheco, once again, it's 15 to 20 touches. He's a 10-point home favorite. I mean, I know McKinnon's been crushing it, but don't be surprised if this could turn into a bit more of the Isaiah Pacheco performance that we were expecting last week against the Texans. Lions at the Panthers, Detroit 2.5-point favorites, game total at 44. So once again, not perfect weather here because we have below freezing temperatures, but the no rain and wind speeds of just 12 miles per hour, not going to result in big downgrades for too many guys involved. That said, we have seen consistent problems with Jared Goff performing outside of the friendly confines of a dome. I mean, since joining the Lions, guys, in a dome, 73.1 PFF passing grade, outdoors, 47.3 yards per attempt, drops from 7.5 to 7.1. I mean, 21 touchdowns and 4 interceptions in domes. 2 freaking touchdowns and 1 interception outdoors. So yes, we have had a majority of those games come in domes. So I wouldn't, you know, completely fade Jared Goff and company, but certainly not ideal for an offense that we have seen be a little bit hit or miss throughout the season. That said, though, Amon-Ra St. Brown, our one true sun god, obviously firing him up in leagues of all shapes and sizes at this point. Jameson Williams, unfortunately, we have not seen enough of a boom. I'd be a little more concerned about Josh Reynolds maybe losing his job to Jameson at one point, as opposed to DJ Chark. So Chark is someone that I do think you can play ahead of those guys in Cleveland and New Orleans. Chark is my wide receiver 33 on the week. Only final note is, unfortunately, we can't really trust these running backs. If it was Swift and Jamal Williams, we could live with that. But when Justin Jackson is legitimately taking almost a third of the snaps in his own right, that's when things get complicated. So you look at Swift specifically, since returning from injury, he's had 10, 5, 7, 8, 9, 18, 9, and most recently 13 touches. So not horrendous, but that's RB3 territory, especially when we're not getting all the pass down work, Justin Jackson doing his thing. So I don't think it's terrible coaching. It's working to an extent. I mean, Jackson is averaging the most rushing yards after contact per carry among the group and the most yards per reception. So he's been just fine. So have Swift, so have Jamal Williams. Great real life. You know, it's not even a problem for the real life Lions, just annoying for us fantasy managers because we want all those touches that we can get. With the Panthers, they are facing a Lions pass funnel defense at this point. I mean, Aiden Hutchinson and company really making their presence felt against the run, but we've still seen Jeffrey Okuda, you know, Amani Arawarie, Jerry Jacobs, and all those corners they have not quite hold up their end of the bargain. So I just wonder if we are going to see the Panthers actually try to attack that. Like, this is one of those things where I think we'll have a pretty clear idea if the Panthers are going to try to change their game, you know, scheme just relative to their opponent, or if they're going to say, you know, it's Panthers football, we do what we do, and, you know, good luck stopping it. Because with Sam Darnold under center, 44.5% pass play rate, that would easily be the lowest in the league, even below Arthur Smith's Falcons, extrapolated over an entire season. So yes, I am confident with DJ Moore against the second worst defense in the league and PPR points per game allowed to opposing wide receivers. Otherwise, miss me with this passing game. Only other note with these running backs would just be the fact that, yeah, I'm really not confident in either Chuba Hubbard or Deontay Foreman. We kind of have this phenomenon sometimes where when usage is changing, we just immediately want to anoint someone, because how could Deontay Foreman be this, you know, really solid fantasy factor, and all of a sudden he's not? So someone else must be ready to step up and take over that role. And I don't really think that's the case, guys. Again, this is a Lions defense that's done a great job against some good running games, like honestly really shutting them down over the best part of the last 4 to 6 weeks. And yes, I do actually favor Chuba over Deontay Foreman this week. Chuba has a combined 35 carries over the past 3 weeks and is the primary pass down back, which you would like to think they're going to utilize more often. That said, okay, 12 combined carries and targets seems like a fair projection for Chuba. That's not enough for me to crack the top 30. So with Chuba, with Deontay, they are recommended sits for me this week. I have Chuba my RB39 and Deontay my RB41 behind guys like Cam Akers, Antonio Gibson, and the Bills running backs. Giants at the Vikings. Minnesota favored by 4-point game total at a lofty 48 because we got a dome. Gotta freaking love it. That said, with this Giants offense, still can't really get behind anyone in this passing game. So Darius Slay and even Richie James, we've seen a few spikes here or there. If you are desperate, okay, I guess you can go to them. And I'm not completely shitting on Slay, and we've given him some love on this podcast. He comes in as my wide receiver 38 this week, ahead of guys like Jacoby Myers, George Pickens, Josh Palmer, amongst others. The bigger question, though, is just going to be, can we really trust anyone in this passing game where Daniel Jones only has 12 passing touchdowns in 14 games and just 2 games with 225 or more passing yards all season long? So largely want to fade at this passing game despite the great matchup against old man Patrick Peterson and company. The good news is Saquon usage is back to having that elite RB1 usage. I mean, if you look at week 15, there was only 4 running backs that actually had over 80% of their offensive snaps. We had Christian McCaffrey, James Connor, who's been an absolute workhorse over the, you know, last 4 to 5 weeks, Saquon Barkley, and also Dalvin Cook. So with that sort of workload, gotta continue to fire up Saquon as the upside RB1 he was born to be. on the Minnesota side of things, it's Justin Jefferson, you know, leader in NFL, leader of the NFL in total receiving yards. He's going to be going up against Fabian Moreau, likely in shadow coverage, back-to-back beatings at the hands of Terry McLaurin here with Adoree Jackson still sidelined. So you love Dalvin. You love Justin Jefferson. We know Kirk Cousins is a borderline QB1 pretty much each and every week. Also, TJ Hawkinson, auto start. It's a very straightforward offense and a reasonable enough matchup. The last thing I would add, though, is I think Adam Thielen, guys, deserves a solid starting treatment. Like, I am absolutely starting Thielen ahead of some guys like Cooper, Olave, DPJ, Michael Gallup, who I don't think have the same sort of target upside. We saw this offense last week, what they are capable of doing if you keep the foot on the gas and at the friendly confines of a dome with a 48-point game total. Don't be afraid to get behind this usual number two pass game option in this offense. So Thielen over these last 4 weeks, wide receiver 9, wide receiver 70, one dud, then wide receiver 11 and wide receiver 30. I do think he'll be shadowed by Nick McCloud, who has allowed the 20th highest passer rating on targets into his covers this season. I will not be drinking the KJ Osborne bounce back Kool-Aid, not bounce back, this freaking encore Kool-Aid, I should say. He's my wide receiver 47 this week. He's alongside guys like Mac Hollins, Curtis Samuel, Paris Campbell, who, hey, maybe they can go ahead and boom. We saw him do it last week. Not going to assume just because he boomed last week, though, that we're all of a sudden going to see him, you know, overtake Thielen, overtake Justin Jefferson in the target tree. I think we just saw Osborne's best game of the season. Good for him. Don't need to be point chasing. Bills at the Bears in Chicago. Buffalo favored by 8.5 points. Game total resting at 40.5. This game is terrible. The only game with worse weather is going to be that Browns-Saints matchup that we'll get to in just a bit. So there's not going to be any active precipitation, but we could get some snow gusts because wind speeds over 20 miles per hour and gusts up to 35. And oh yeah, the temperature is going to feel like negative 11. So absolutely brutal. The second worst matchup of the week. The one good thing for these teams is that it's not going to impact the quarterbacks as much as it would otherwise. I mean, Josh Allen, 37 freaking rushing touchdowns since entering the league. That is the 10th highest mark since being drafted back in 2018. And then Justin Fields, I mean, just 207 rushing yards needed to break Lamar Jackson's single season record at the position. I am only starting Patrick Mahomes over these pair of quarterbacks. I have it ranked Mahomes, Josh Allen, Justin Fields in the ranks that you can always find updated at pff.com and on the app. With the Bills backfield, Singletary was the leader last week, and we've seen this more times than not throughout the season. That said, Nyheim Hines usage has gone up and down. James Cook has started to split things more evenly than ever. I would try to avoid playing any of these Bills backs if at all possible. I don't have any of them inside of my top 30. Really, the only other Bills player I want to play other than Josh Allen is going to be Stephon Diggs. So this isn't quite as atrocious as, again, some of these other matchups on the Bills side of the ball specifically, because they're still implied to score assault enough, 24.75 points. That's the sixth highest team implied total in week 15. So from that standpoint, Josh Allen, and who's their number one pass game option, Stephon Diggs, I'm fine trusting them. It's more so the complimentary guys that I do not want to get involved with. So if there is a quarterback in the NFL capable of rifling that football through some 35 mile per hour wind gusts, it is Josh Allen. And hey, we saw that not only last week in a game that didn't have the worst weather, but last season in that Patriots game where Mac Jones threw the ball 3 times, the Bills were still willing to let Josh Allen rack up, I believe, 28 pass attempts in that one. On the Bears side of things, I already talked about Fields and how we're feeling good about that. But David Montgomery, guys, without Khalil Herbert over these past 4 weeks, PPR RB6, RB21, RB12, and then another RB6 finish last week. So the Bills have been pretty good against the run, but I still think a lot of that dominance, more so towards the first half of the season as opposed to, you know, life without Von Miller here over the last 4 to 6 weeks. So with Khalil Herbert likely returning from that hip injury, it's a slight downgrade to David Montgomery, but it hasn't exactly been like this James Conner, 90% snap roll for David Montgomery over all these games. I still have him as my RB21 right there alongside guys like Zonovan Knight, like J.K. Dobbins, like Najee Harris. They're running backs that should see 15 to 20 carries and aren't going to be getting used all that much in the passing game. So should Herbert come back, it's not ideal for David Montgomery. But again, we've already seen Darrington Evans and to a lesser extent Tristan Ebner stay involved in this backfield. Not overly concerned with Montgomery, continue to fire him up as a volume-based RB2. Bengals at the Patriots, Cincy favored by 3 points, game total resting at a pretty low 41.5. Not great weather. It will be around 24 degrees without too much precipitation and wind, but you guys have seen that winter in Foxborough. So I'm not actively downgrading anyone here because we don't have the huge wind red flag like we do elsewhere. Just realize probably not going to be all that fun to be suiting up and playing in that one. On the Bengals side of things, it's not the easiest pass game matchup. But then again, guys, Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, these guys got us here, and we're going to continue to ride the bus with them, hopefully to the fantasy championship. The one guy who, again, you're not benching, but I would just temper expectations for a little bit, is going to be Joe Mixon, because he has had, unfortunately, a lesser pass game role since returning from that concussion. In weeks 1 through 9, Mixon ran a route on 56% of the offense's dropbacks. Samaje Perine just 25%. In week 14, though, just 42%. In week 15, just 45%. So Perine has been maintaining a lot more involvement in the passing game since Mixon returned. Does this mean you shouldn't start Mixon? Of course not. He's my RB11 on the week, but honestly, similar to a reason why I was a little bit lower on Mixon and Nick Chubb. Yeah, that one didn't exactly work out, but you know, the process was right. He yelled. With these guys, they're more so low-end RB1s when they don't have that full-time three-down role where they do also get all the targets. So, yes, when Joe Mixon is going to go ahead and score 5 freaking touchdowns, whatever it was that one time, he'll be just fine. And with Nick Chubb, again, the idea of fading them, it's not like you're ranking them freaking RB20 or anything. They're both top 12 running backs. They've been that way for me all season. But, again, you take away that pass-down role, and that's the difference between guys like Ramondre Stevenson, Saquon Barkley, and more one-dimensional, sadly, early down grinders. With the Patriots, speaking of Ramondre, fully back in the good favor and should hopefully have that whole other week to get even healthier. So he's my RB5 on the week. You cannot show me a lineup that should have Ramondre anywhere near that bench. And then we just got to see what's going on in this passing game. But similar to the Giants, guys, there's just not enough meat on the bone for me to be overly interested here, even if we can condense the targets. So Mac, just one game all season with multiple touchdowns. He hasn't cleared 250 passing yards in 7 of his last 8 games. If Devontae Parker returns from the concussion protocol, it's going to be more crowded than ever. So, unfortunately, last week, I mean, Tyquan Thornton and Nelson Agholor, they were the full-time receivers, whereas Jacoby Myers didn't even get the full-time role in the slot with a lot of 2 tight end formations. So, we'll see. Again, not the prettiest game. The Patriots haven't been giving us much at all in the passing game all season long. Ramondre Stevenson, otherwise, miss me with the Patriots. Falcons at the Ravens. Baltimore favored by 7.5 points. Game total at 37.5. So similar to New England, not great weather. It's going to feel like 7 degrees here, but not enough precipitation or wind to be overly concerned here. More so concerned about who the hell is going to be throwing the football for these teams. For Atlanta, it is going to be Desmond Ridder once again, but are they actually going to trust them? I kind of doubt it because last week did not look great. The problem is this defense, like the Titans, like who's the other one? Like the Lions, Titans, and Ravens, you can argue, are the 3 biggest pass funnel defenses in the NFL because of how much they stack and just really take away the opponent's run game and accordingly get diced up through the air. So you look at the Browns last week, they did run for 143 yards against the Ravens. But before that, guys, 44, 48, 36, 38, 88, and 65 total rushing yards allowed. So I have a hard time seeing Cordarrelle Patterson or Tyler Allgeier making too much happen against this defense. So I know Allgeier's been this sexy name that we've been hyping up on the waiver wire podcast and all that. I just can't get behind these guys in such a tough matchup as legit top 30 options. So I do have CPAT right there as the RB30. I guess that technically does make him a top 30 option. Excuse me. Tyler Allgeier behind him at RB33. But give me guys like Rashad White, like Zach Moss, like Leonard Fournette, even Latavius Murray, who I just think have a higher touch ceiling, aren't going to be held down quite as much in such a run-first offense and no target volume available. The good news is the target volume that is available has mostly been going to Drake London. 23 total targets over the last 2 games, and as bad as that Ridder performance was, he did still manage to get London 7 catches for 77 yards. So I would be playing London ahead of those aforementioned players in Cleveland and New Orleans. If you guys can notice the trend, if I feel at all good about a guy's volume, at all good about their ability or matchup, I am likely going to be ranking them ahead of that mess that we will get to in just a second. On the Ravens side of things, I mean, again, this is a passing game that I think we all could agree before the season started. Wide receiver room specifically, bottom five unit in the league. Okay, maybe Rashad Bateman could break out and really be something, but we didn't know that. It was Bateman, Duvernay, and what, like DeMarcus Robinson, James Prochet, unironically a starting wide receiver to start the year, just wasn't good. They bring in DeSean Jackson, and they're having him run underneath routes out there. So Patrick Ricard, you know, running wheel routes. It has not been pretty for this passing game, and now you take away Devin Duvernay, who suffered a season-ending injury in practice this week. It has just been brutal. So this team now has under 200 passing yards in nine of their last 11 games. Yes, DeMarcus Robinson, you can bump him up a little bit. That said, I still have a hard time between him and guys like George Pickens and Josh Palmer. I would rather take the passing games that have shown just a little bit of upside throughout this season. Once again, with not the most ideal weather conditions either, can't completely trust this passing game, especially if Tyler Huntley is once again going to be under center. I know we were hopeful that Lamar Jackson would be back for this week 16 matchup, but he started off the week with a DNP on Wednesday, still getting back from that PCL sprain. So I'm not exactly lining up to fire up Lamar as his top five quarterback when he's back, guys. Like, okay, ahead of Trevor Lawrence because his weather situation is really brutal, but I would still start guys like Joe Burrow, Dak Prescott, Tua, Herbert, Fields, Allen, and Mahomes, starting all those guys ahead of Lamar Jackson this week, because kind of lost in how bad Tyler Huntley in this passing game was last week is the reality that Lamar Jackson and the Ravens weren't exactly firing on all cylinders either before he got injured. I mean, since weeks four to week 13, one finish inside the top 10 for Lamar Jackson. Hasn't consistently been a great day to be great there. In the run game, J.K. Dobbins looked healthier than he has all season last week, which is fantastic. But still, guys, 39% snaps, 13 carries. I mean, Justice Hill almost outsnapped J.K. Dobbins, and we still got Gus Edwards there having seven carries in his own right. So I just have a really hard time trusting running backs that are getting around 15 carries, and that's it. There's no pass game work ever in Baltimore for these running backs. And yes, Dobbins, he's not someone you need to fade by any stretch of the imagination, but he comes in as a low-end RB2 for me. Behind guys, they're just, I should say, right alongside guys like Zonovan Knight, Najee Harris, and Latavius Murray. I would start guys like Raheem Mostert, Miles Sanders, Zeke, ETN ahead of him because I think they have higher overall touch ceilings and or in better offenses. So more volume and a better offense, more touchdowns opportunities sound like something you might be interested in. I am. Now for the main event, the worst weather game ever, maybe not ever, but you know, it's definitely not a good one. Saints at the Browns, Cleveland 2.5 point favorites, game total 32.5. Shout out to Action Network's Evan Abrams. If the total closes at 31.5 or lower, it would be the lowest over under since a Bengals Browns game back in 2008 that closed at 31 points. That game ended in a 14-0 shutout. So that's what we're dealing with here, guys. Horrific weather, 14 degrees, 28% chance of precipitation. Okay, that's not horrendous, but this is 20 to 30 miles per hour sustained winds with gusts up to 40 miles per hour. The forward pass could be very difficult for either team to be completing at all downfield this week. Wouldn't be surprised at all if we get run-centric strategies out of Coach Kevin Stefanski, who's been here before. If you remember in 2020, we really had to adjust a lot of Baker Mayfield stats in the whole passing game because they had three straight brutal weather games against the Raiders, Texans, and Eagles. Baker only threw 25, 20, and 22 pass attempts in those matchups. And it's funny, Browns beat reporter Mary Kay Cabell. I have a rough last name, should be better at this, but Mary Kay. Anyway, she actually cited, you know, in kind of the Watson recruitment that apparently he was a little bit hesitant about Cleveland in part because of that game he had to play with that brutal weather. But, you know, $250 million guaranteed obviously changed some of those feelings. So with Cleveland, we can't trust anyone here in this passing game, guys, because unfortunately, I thought Deshaun would have a nice, you know, bounce back opportunity last week against the Ravens. Wasn't meant to be. And, you know, any way you want to cut it, he's been terrible since coming back from that suspension. 42 quarterbacks this year with 100 plus dropbacks. Deshaun ranks 38th in PFF passing grade, passer rating, and yards per attempt alike. Just has not been good. So Amari Cooper, Donovan Peoples-Jones, David Njoku, if you have even anything close to a better option, I would definitely be playing that guy. Again, I have both those wide receivers buried in my low-end wide receiver three range, and maybe that's even, you know, a little bit too low. So maybe even that's a little bit too high, I should say. So I think Cooper and DPJ, once you start looking at like clear-cut, you know, complementary options or guys in bad passing games like Darius Slayton, Jacoby Myers, Michael Gallup, Romeo Doubs, guys like that, then I think we can kind of wrap our mind around it. But please do whatever you can to not play pass catchers from this matchup. That said, all this weather, all this bad weather could be opportunity for someone, and that someone could be Kareem Hunt with Nick Chubb, guys, back-to-back DMPs to start the week with a foot injury. So still not sure on the severity. You know, you guys know how it is as a national reporter. They just repeat the injury report without giving us any actual updates on how severe the injury is. But obviously, if he's not practicing, that is not good. So Kareem Hunt, it's been kind of weird with him and Chubb, where it seems like most times when Chubb gets hurt, Hunt also gets hurt. So we haven't had the largest sample. And then last year when we saw Hunt get hurt, Chubb's role didn't change all that much because it has elevated D'Ernest Johnson. I'm not as confident in that happening, though, because the thing is, Chubb doesn't have the pass down work. That's for Hunt. But you take away Hunt and D'Ernest Johnson stepped up in that pass game role. Now, could D'Ernest step up into Chubb's run game role without Chubb? Okay, maybe, but kind of doubtful. Jerome Ford, I know he's someone we've been interested in. He's played 7 total snaps this season, so not overly worried about him. The 4-game sample we are working with Kareem Hunt, though, comes from 2020 with him healthy and Chubb out. And in those games, guys, he went ahead and had 23, 15, 21, and 16 touches. And a couple of those snap rates truly were robust. 70%, 53%, and a 31-point loss where the starters were done by the fourth quarter, but then 90% and 86%. So the latter one, though, did come in one of those horrific weather games that could certainly be in play again. So if Nick Chubb is indeed sidelined, I don't know that Kareem Hunt immediately is someone like we're going to put in the top 5, in the top 6, like a Tony Pollard if Zeke is out or anything like that. But I will say, guys, going to be awfully difficult to keep him out of the position's top 15. So as I look at the ranks right now, if Nick Chubb is indeed sidelined, I think I'd fire up Kareem Hunt as my overall RB10 ahead of guys like James Conner, who's going to have to deal with Trace McSorley under center, ahead of Joe Mixon, who doesn't have the same pass down work, ahead of Aaron Jones, who's splitting things with AJ Dillon, ahead of Kenneth Walker, who is awfully banged up at the moment. So we'll still start Tony Pollard, Dalvin Cook, Saquon, Stevenson, Eckler, amongst other guys ahead of Kareem Hunt in that situation. But yeah, you take away Nick Chubb, very, very good things if you happen to have Hunt stashed. On the Saints side of things, once again, do not trust his passing game. I'm a big fan of the Rashid Shaheen, you know, breakout and all that. The dude doesn't have more than 4 targets in the game all season. I'm not expecting him to be catching too many more underthrown deep balls by Taysom Hill with blown coverages moving forward. So Chris Olave, unfortunately, dealing with a hamstring injury, just like Cooper and DPJ. If you have a guy with a pulse and any level of talent or a decent matchup, please play them over these pass catchers with one exception. He's not really a pass catcher, though. Guys, I think this might finally be the Taysom Hill week that we've been chasing ever since that 4-touchdown performance. So what other time would there be to really finally take the shackles off of Taysom and just go let Taysom be Taysom? 10-plus rush attempts, maybe a target or two, maybe a pass or two. I have Taysom Hill this week as my tight end 7 behind only Travis Kelce, Mark Andrews, George Kittle, TJ Hockenson, Dalton Schultz, and Dallas Goedert. So again, if you're a legit talented tight end, featured guy in a solid passing game like those players, I would still play them ahead of Taysom Hill because, again, with that game total, the Saints are implied to score the fewest points in the week. I mean, we do love touches, but if they're touches in an offense that seemingly has little chance in hell of putting up a lot of points, those aren't as valuable. I still want those tight ends that are proven at one point or another this season to be on a different stratosphere of Taysom Hill in terms of their ability to actually play that position. I will still be playing them ahead of Taysom, but once we start looking at guys like Evan Engram, terrible weather, Chigui Okonkwo, quarterback change potential, or Treylon Burks coming back. Pat Freiermuth just got outsnapped by Zach Gentry. Dawson Knox, bad weather. David Njoku, bad weather. Gerald Everett dealing with the returning Donald Parham. That's where I'm going to go ahead and take Taysom Hill's guaranteed rush attempts with the potential for a hell of a lot more in a matchup that certainly seems to be swinging his way. So 5 straight weeks with at least a 40% snap rate after not clearing that at all during the first 2 months of the season. 5.3 rush attempts per game. He's averaging 6.6 yards per carry on the season, guys. I am all in on Taysom Hill this week. Commanders at the 49ers, San Francisco favored by 7 points, game total at a lowly 38, because I guess Vegas just doesn't like these offenses because the weather is all good in San Fran. So really tough matchup for this Washington run game. Brian Robinson, Antonio Gibson, hopefully you got some good run out of Robinson in particular over the last several weeks, not really last week, but you know, before that, things were going good because we are not going to be recommending starting them in this one. Number 1 in fantasy points per game allowed to opposing running backs, Nick Bosa and company, are 100 106 fewer rushing yards allowed to opposing running backs this year. So I don't want anything to do with that run game. Terry McLaurin's really going to be the only recommended start here, but even that's not going to be easy. I'm expecting a shadow matchup between Terry McLaurin and Charvarius Ward. He's done a really good job these last 2 weeks on Mike Evans, 44 scoreless yards, and then more recently, DK Metcalf, 55 scoreless yards, getting awfully physical along the way. But man, shadow cornerbacks have nightmares about Terry McLaurin, guys. He has had this year 8 separate instances where he's been shadowed by a number one cornerback, and he has cleared 70 yards each and every time. Fabio Moreau twice, Darius Slay twice, who went over 100 yards on twice. Jair Alexander, 73 yards and a touchdown. Stephon Gilmore, 113 yards, also got the better of Christian Fulton for the Titans, and Jeffrey Okuda with the Lions, more plays than not. So again, Terry McLaurin consistently is beating the top number one shadow cornerbacks out there. Cannot be overly concerned about any matchup with him, more so just a Taylor Heineke experience. Could that be terrible? Yes. But Terry, boom or bust wide receiver too, that we know is capable of booming. On the 49ers side of things, Brock Purdy, multiple touchdowns in all three of his extended appearances this season, thanks in large part to the 49ers' plethora of skill position talent. So Nathan Yonke and I talked a lot about what to do without Jalen Hurts on the waiver wire edition of this podcast, but here it is again. I have 13 quarterbacks ranked where it's like, okay, feeling pretty good about these guys. They're healthy. They're in reasonable enough weather. I've at least gotten over it thanks to, you know, their rushing ability. We talked about that with Fields and Herbert. And then when we have guys like Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and Geno Smith, it's just the sort of game format's potential back and forth scoring, or in Brady's case, just the league where scoring defense, where I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt here. So after those kind of clear-cut guys, the top streaming options for those Jalen Hurts teams that are hopefully available. Number one, Daniel Jones. I'm not sure if he's available. Same thing with number two, Jared Goff. They're more of like the 50% range. So if they are available, give me those guys. But after that, guys, Gardner Minshew, Brock Purdy, Zach Wilson are the top three recommended waiver ads of the week. So Minshew, Purdy, and Wilson, go get them if you need some help at the position. Again, pass catchers, George Kittle feeling great after that 2-touchdown performance. Continue to fire him up as that top 3 tight end that we know he can be anytime he gets a good amount of targets. And also don't completely give up on Brandon Ayuk here. I know last week wasn't good, but you know what? When we have a game where McCaffrey and the run game really getting going from the beginning, not all surprising that we did only see one guy really step up in the passing game. So Ayuk still feeling good. Kittle, McCaffrey, just fire up the studs in San Fran. Eagles at the Cowboys, Dallas 4.5-point home favorites, game total 47. We got that roof in Jerry World, not worried about any of that weather. We are worried about Jalen Hurts' shoulder, though. Looking more and more likely that Gardner Minshew will be under center for the first time this season. He was the fantasy QB 10 and QB 18 in 2 starts with the Eagles last year. And yeah, guys, he's a perfectly average quarterback. I don't know about, you know, I've heard, I wanted this, the couch of my guy, Sigmund, yesterday, football guys, you guys should check that out. I tweeted out the link on Twitter yesterday, but I think Sig's point was that maybe he could be this Geno Smith guy that steps up afterwards. And hey, maybe. That's fine. I think Gardner has that in his potential range of outcomes moving forward. I want him to, though, guys, become this era's Ryan Fitzpatrick. Give me Minshew on freaking 15 teams over the next 15 years, constant backup who ends up maybe beating out some bad starters or just comes in and is a lot of fun for 1 or 2 game spurts at a time. So honestly, with Minshew, said this stat in the waiver wire, but I'm confident in him because he's being dropped into arguably the best offensive environment in the entire NFL. I took the average PFF grades for rushing, receiving, run blocking, and pass blocking. Everything except pure passing, and the Eagles had the highest combined team average of anybody out there. Chargers were the worst last time I checked, so that sucks for Justin Herbert, but he is keeping on, keeping on. So Gardner Minshew for me, again, my top most likely available quarterback streaming option in place of Jalen Hurts. Feeling good about A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, a returning Dallas Goedert, and Miles Sanders as well, especially Sanders, with Jalen obviously not factoring quite as much into the running game. Gardner not factoring as much as Jalen. You guys know what I'm saying. With the Cowboys now, can we chill the hell out on Dak? This is unbelievable. The Cowboys just gave up 41 freaking points on a pick 6 that hit his receiver's hands, and all of a sudden we have, I guess, people unironically calling for Cooper Rush. Come on, man. Since Dak got back, this offense has scored 24, 49, 28, 40, 28, 54, 27, and then 34 points. So yeah, Dak's awesome. And he's gotten really unlucky this year with some of those interceptions. So I went ahead and I looked at interceptions that were not deemed turnover-worthy plays by PFF. So we're talking about balls that got tipped at the line, that hit the receiver in the chest, and then bounced right into a defender. Maybe defenders made a spectacular play on a ball he had no business coming anywhere near. So four quarterbacks, again, with six of those interceptions: Dak Prescott, Joe Burrow, who you've seen a ton of that from, Justin Herbert, and even Davis Mills. Yeah, Brandon Cooks has not been doing him many favors on those throughout this year. So Dak, CeeDee Lamb, Dalton Schultz, fire him up with all the confidence in the world. Michael Gallup, more of a boom or most likely bust wide receiver four, and Zeke and Pollard feeling good. Five straight games with 15 plus touches for each. They are making it work. Saturday Night Football, Raiders at the Steelers. Pittsburgh 2.5-point favorites, game total at 39. Another one of these where it is cold. It's going to feel like negative 4 degrees Fahrenheit out there, but not enough precipitation or wind to be overly concerned about these passing games. So with the Raiders, pretty straightforward. Devontae, Josh Jacobs, you're firing them up everywhere. We can't quite get behind these incoming guys that just got back from injury, though. Hunter Renfrow, 59% route rate. Darren Waller, just 66%. They're easing both back into action. Maybe not even with Renfrow, they just seem really high on Mac Hollins, who was pretty damn close to having a huge week in week 15, week high in unrealized air yards. He is their field stretcher for whatever reason. Hey, the Steelers have allowed the fifth most receiving yards to opposing wide receivers on the year. So DFS, you're a desperate flex. I do think Mac Hollins deserves that similar boomer bust wide receiver four treatment as Michael Gallup. On the Steelers side of things, it is looking like Kenny Pickett should be there. I think he still has to clear the concussion protocol, but Mike Tomlin told us he is expecting to start. So that's good, and you know, should hopefully keep things going for the passing game, because Deontay Johnson, guys, wide receiver 25 and wide receiver 11 over the last 2 weeks. Hopefully we continue to see him get peppered with targets and make a little bit more out of them than he has before. But let's face it, this still is a Steelers offense we've seen far more bad than good from throughout this season. Really, it's Deontay as a wide receiver three. Najee Harris as a borderline RB2. Not really his fault, but he had zero targets last week. Allegedly one of the better pass-catching running backs in football. Zero targets last week. Cannot have that. Even Pat Freiermuth, playing through the pain, not ideal. Still at a 74% route rate last week. So when he's out there, they're throwing the ball, and that's all we really care about. But guys, Zach Gentry freaking out-snapped him. Zach Gentry, been talking about this with Dwayne since freaking last summer. It's so weird. I don't know why he continues to actually, like, unironically factor in these game plans. Does seem to be at least somewhat injury-related. So with Freiermuth, someone that, again, I would play Taysom Hill ahead of. I'm not completely bumping down the ranks, but he does come in as my tight end 10, not something I think you need to force in the lineups. On the Sunday, Christmas Day action, Packers are at the Dolphins, Miami favored by 4 points, game total of 49.5. So weather isn't perfect. We have a 42% chance of rain, but temps and wind are fine. 49.5 point game total. That's the highest of the week. We are liking both of these offenses. So good news for the Packers. AJ Dillon already cleared concussion protocol. Seems to be just fine for Sunday. And yeah, we'll see about this passing game. Actually looked pretty good last week, aside from that horrendous interception that Aaron Rodgers threw. Man, you know, you see him roll out, huge pocket, has an open receiver, just completely sailed it over Alan Lazard's head. So the only problem I would say, and just thing to note, I know Romeo Doubs, he caught all five of his targets. He looked good out there. He was not even close to a full-time role. He was actually the fourth Packers wide receiver behind Christian Watson, Alan Lazard, and Randall Cobb. So can't trust Doubs. Go back to, you know, Christian Watson as a boomer bust wide receiver too, honestly. Like, look, yeah, he wasn't able to get it going last week. He missed Aaron Rodgers. Sneaky little coy little audible out there. But still someone that we've seen have far more good games than bad over the past 2 months of action. And again, this has the potential to be the highest scoring game of the week. I am perfectly fine going back to the well with Christian Watson. Alan Lazard, also not the worst deep wide receiver four option. On the Dolphins side of things, we know the passing game is elite. Waddle, Hill, Tua should be auto starts in pretty much all leagues out there. The running back situation is what is going to be worth monitoring. So Raheem Mostert, unfortunately, was not spotted at practice on Wednesday. I'm recording this at 3:24 on Wednesday afternoon. So hopefully we have more information about that soon. But yeah, obviously not ideal for someone that, let's face it, hasn't exactly been the most, you know, the least injury prone running back in the NFL over the past few seasons. Just a situation where, yeah, we hope he's going to be fine, but if not, maybe Jeff Wilson's back and then all of a sudden is taking over that role. So Wilson's still working through that hip injury. if we do see Raheem Mostert come back to practice, no injury designation, everything's fine, I am going to fire him up as a top 15 option at the position. Because you look at it last week, guys, 77% snaps, 70% routes, and looked explosive doing it. So on that route rate, he only had one target, but that is a huge route rate for a running back. Only Dalvin Cook, Christian McCaffrey, and James Conner had higher marks in week 15. So Packers have allowed the fifth most rushing yards to opposing running backs. Again, monitor this injury, but Raheem Mostert in this offense, in its potential shootout as a home favorite, going right back to the well with them this week with confidence. Broncos are at the Rams. Denver 2.5-point favorites, game total at a lowly 36.5. The weather's fine. These teams just suck. So Vegas was like, screw you. Here's your 36.5-point game total. Luckily, we at least have some condensed touch usage going on both sides of the ball. Latavius Murray, 25 combined carries and targets versus the Aaron Donald-less Rams defense. Hey, they've allowed 165 and 138 rushing yards over the last 2 weeks. So don't go crazy, but I'm off my, you know, okay, Latavius Murray, we're fading you even because of, even with all that volume you got. He's my RB24 on the week. I would start Murray ahead of Leonard Fournette, Isaiah Pacheco, Zach Moss, and AJ Dillon. I still lean a little bit more towards guys like Najee Harris, J.K. Dobbins, and Zonovan Knight. Let's face it, this Broncos offense still doesn't exactly have the benefit of the doubt. And Jerry Jeudy is someone that you can fire up as a rock solid wide receiver 3. If Cortland Sutton does remain sidelined, Judy's my wide receiver 28, ahead of Adam Thielen, Marquise Brown, Drake London, amongst others. Not expecting him to get that Jalen Ramsey shadow treatment. Only DeAndre Hopkins, Metcalf, and Davante Adams have this season. On the Rams side of things, this Broncos pass defense is so good. We do not want to mess with Tyler Higbee, Tutu Atwell, any of those pass catchers involved. Sorry, Baker. The one guy we can kind of get behind is Cam Akers, guys. He's had pretty damn good usage. I mean, last week, 74% snaps and 59% routes, which is almost identical to the sort of usage that we saw Josh Jacobs get. So last 3 weeks, 18, 13, and 15 touches. He's right around that RB3 territory. I would play Cam Akers ahead of the Washington running backs and even the Carolina Panthers running backs. Hey, I know, bad season, but we're playing week 16. We're not playing weeks 1 through 15. Don't let, you know, your Cam Akers disappointment from earlier in the season potentially distract from him being a low-key solid flex in this home spot. Sunday Night Football, we got the Buccaneers at the Cardinals. Tampa Bay favored by 6.5 points. Game total at a lowly 41, despite being in a dome should the Cardinals decide to shut that roof. So the good news is we have seen this Tampa Bay offense at least not be quite as atrocious in recent weeks. I mean, we've seen Tom Brady, 3 top 13 finishes in the past 4 games. Chris Godwin hasn't had a finish worse than the wide receiver 37 since he returned from injury in week 4. Yes, Mike Evans, it's been rough, hasn't finished better than wide receiver 25 since week 8. 10 straight scoreless games. My bull call of the week that I'll deny if it goes wrong, Mike Evans scoring 2 touchdowns against the Cardinals league worst scoring defense. If it's right, you heard it here first. Also, with the backfield, guys, since Leonard Fournette returned from injury, RB 16, RB 23, last week RB 31, Rashad White, RB 9, RB 18, and RB 47. So neither guy has this, you know, rock solid RB 1 or even an RB 2 floor, but there's enough pass game volume to go around that we're usually feeling good about these guys. So I might even have to bump them up a little bit more just relative to some of the stuff that we've been talking about. I think Leonard Fournette, probably the more I think about, deserves to go ahead of some of these more one-dimensional backs. I'm going to bump Fournette up to my RB 21 ahead of guys like Zonovan Knight, J.K. Dobbins, Najee Harris, Latavius Murray, who simply don't have the same pass game volume. Rashad White just doesn't seem to, he's not getting the same routes as Fournette. And let's be honest, Fournette, kind of a badass in pass protection. I mean, we remember that viral hit he had on Micah Parsons back in week 1. So unfortunately, Rashad White just not quite involved enough, more of a mid-tier RB3 for me than anything. On the Cardinals side of things, we have gotten confirmation that it's not going to be Colt McCoy. It is going to be Trace McSorley under center. And this sucks. I am now not going to be recommending starting Marquise Brown. I'll probably even bump him behind those Cleveland and Saints options. That's how dire things could be with Trace McSorley under center. I mean, the guy's only completed 46% of his career passes, and he combines that with a Kyler-esque attitude towards scrambling the football. So it's not good. I still do think DeAndre Hopkins, who we've seen just be so consistent since returning from that suspension, Hopkins as the clear-cut number one pass game option in this offense is still going to be tough to keep outside that top 24. Currently looking at my ranks, I probably go ahead and fire him up right around that wide receiver 18, 19 spot. So guys like Mike Williams, Terry McLaurin, T. Higgins, Keenan Allen, Juju, Chris Godwin, I'd probably be starting all of them ahead of DeAndre Hopkins, but still a quality low-end RB2. Honestly, the best play in Arizona now is probably James Conner, absolute workhorse over these past 6 weeks of action. Literally almost never leaving the field out here. One of the only, pretty much the only running back that has a chance to actually play 100% of his team snaps during any given week. So he has the workload of like legit the best running back in the NFL. But as we know, in a Trace McSorley-led offense, not exactly a reality that we should be chasing. So Connor is going to come in as a low-end RB1 for me. I would play him ahead of guys that just simply don't have the same pass game upside like Joe Mixon, even Aaron Jones, Kenneth Walker, Raheem Mostert, amongst others. And finally, Monday Night Football, Chargers at the Colts, LAC, 4.5 point game, 4.5 point favorites, game total resting at 46. Once again, got a dome, got it, love engineers with the Chargers. Keenan Allen, 37 targets over the past 3 weeks since returning from injury. He's been the wide receiver 19, 22, 11, 9, and 19 in full PPR scoring. I have Keenan Allen and Chris Godwin right next to each other as volume hog borderline wide receiver ones in full PPR scoring. Mike Williams is the one that gets downgraded just a little bit, anticipating a shadow matchup with Stephon Gilmore, who, yeah, let's face it, not exactly the guy you want to be facing as a contested catch artist. That said, you start looking at guys like Christian Kirk, Garrett Wilson in the bad weather games, you know, DJ Moore, Christian Watson, maybe offenses that we're not feeling quite as good about and don't have Justin Herbert under center. Mike Williams, for me, the boomer bust wide receiver too that he was put on this planet to be. With the Colts, Matt Ryan benched once again. Something goes wrong in Indy. Just blame it on the quarterback and move on. Seems to work for Frank Reich. And now Jeff Saturday obviously taking after him. So going to be Nick Foles under center. Yeah, Reggie Wayne, you still throwing up about Matt Ryan reminding you of Peyton? I do not think so. Michael Pittman's okay. But beyond that, guys, we just got to be really careful here. Yeah, we've seen Nick Foles have some highs over the years and also some painful lows. There's a reason why they went to Sam Ellinger before him back in, you know, the Frank Reich end of that era in the first place. So Michael Pittman, someone that I am going to be having as still of a, you know, mid-tier wide receiver three. It's a kind of a similar situation to DeAndre Hopkins. I will have Hopkins ahead of Pittman, but there's so much potential volume on the table for Michael Pittman that you can't put him too low in the ranks. Otherwise, though, I don't want anything to do with his passing game. Only other big note is going to be this rushing attack. So I have actually gotten a more positive outlook on Zach Moss. Now, not getting carried away, he's still, you know, a mid-tier RB3 for me. I play guys like Leonard Fournette, Latavius Murray, Najee Dobbins, even Isaiah Pacheco ahead of Zach Moss this week, but I'm not as worried about Jordan Wilkins coming back. Nathan Yonke made a good point when I was talking to him on the waiver pod. I mean, when Deion Jackson had the big game after Taylor and Taylor was already hurt and then Nyheim Hines got hurt. Like, they didn't have an early down back really that could take that role available for the game that Deion went out there and just balled out. And then they did actually elevate Jordan Wilkins for another one of those games. I believe the second Sam Ellinger start. And that's when we saw the Deion Jackson dud. So in this case, Zach Moss really was brought into the fold to be that early down guy. That's why he was active. And that's why when Jonathan Taylor went down, he got the early down work. And it was Deion Jackson getting the pass down stuff. Even though Jordan Wilkins is going to be active, I mean, the fact that he was inactive last week tells us that Zach Moss is ahead of him on the depth chart. And when they're both early down guys, I'm not assuming it's going to all of a sudden become this three-back committee. So not a given by any stretch of the imagination, but when you combine that possibility with these great matchups, I mean, you look at it, Colts and the Jets have the softest two remaining schedules in terms of fantasy points per game allowed to opposing RBs. I am cautiously optimistic that Zach Moss can get 15 plus carries and hopefully make the most out of them out of this Joey Bosa-less Chargers defense. With that, everyone, going to wrap up another edition of the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. Appreciate you guys tuning in with us all season long. Don't be afraid to make a great play. Just, you know, maybe try to review a couple snap counts, route rates. Just don't be a complete idiot about trusting your gut here down the stretch. But again, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, whatever you celebrate. For YouTube guys out there, I'm wearing the coolest shirt ever. It's my Merry Xmas Dez Bryant Christmas sweater. Shout out, I think Fresh Young Tees or something. But yeah, Dez, throwing up the X. My freaking dude. Favorite player that I've ever watched play football. Again, Merry Xmas. Go Dez. Dez caught it. week 16. Let's win some fantasy championships. Thank you guys again for tuning to PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm Ian Harditz. Until next time, take care, everybody.